Today, in both our Old Testament lesson and in our psalm, we meet Joseph. It is the very same Joseph that inspired Andrew Lloyd Webber's musical about an amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. Unfortunately, though, our lectionary skips most of his story, so it's worth knowing at least the shape of it. So Jacob, who we've been hearing about for several weeks at this point, had 12 sons by 4 different women, and Joseph is the second youngest, and he is the obvious favorite. Everybody knows it. Joseph knows it, and his brothers are keenly aware of it. It's part of the reason that they hate him. And then one day, his brothers see an opportunity and a chance to just get rid of him once and for all. So they plot, and then they throw him into a pit where he is then sold into slavery in Egypt. And to hide what they did, they tell their father that an animal tore him to pieces. All the while in Egypt, Joseph suffers, and then he rises to power, and then years later, he will feed those very same brothers who sought to get rid of him. Today, though, all we get is the very beginning. The part where everything goes wrong. Although we probably shouldn't be too surprised that everything is going wrong, because for weeks, our readings have shown us how it has been going wrong for generation after generation. So let me recap just a little bit of those things that have gone wrong. First, Sarah could not conceive, so she gave her slave, Hagar, to Abraham to bear him an heir, Ishmael. When Sarah later had her own son Isaac, jealousy took over. And she and Abraham sent Hagar and Ishmael into the desert to fend for themselves. But there's another layer to this aspect of the story, though, because Hagar was a slave and her son Ishmael grew up free, but cast out. In today's chapter with Joseph, it is Ishmael's own descendants, traders on the road to Egypt, who carry Joseph into slavery. The oppressed becomes the oppressor. Nobody plans on it. It just simply happens when unaddressed pain goes unchecked. History repeats itself. And then Isaac and Rebekah openly favored two of their twin sons. Isaac was solidly on Team Esau, and Esau was the eldest by just a hot second, and Rebekah was Team Jacob all the way. She even helped Jacob lie his way into the blessing that rightfully belonged to his older brother. Unfortunately, the brother's rift after that never healed. And so Jacob knows exactly what favoritism does to a family because he lived through it. And now he's doing that to his own children. We hear that Jacob loved Joseph more than any of his other children. He even gives Joseph a special robe. It's not a work robe. This is the famous Technicolor coat. It was likely floor length with long sleeves. It was absolutely useless for shepherding. And with all of its fancy colors, it just screamed from about a mile off, "I'm the favorite. I get fancy presents, and my brothers don't." And Joseph just struts around while his brothers are out there in the field sweating away. Abraham to Isaac to Jacob to Joseph, multiple generations. And in each, unequal love and favoritism breed trickery and jealousy and broken relationships. History just keeps repeating itself. But aside from being the favorite and walking around like he owns the place, Joseph has other, we'll call them quirks, that make him difficult to like. Our lectionary cuts it out, but one day Joseph sits his whole family down, his parents included, and tells them about two dreams that he had. And in those dreams, the entire family will bow down in subservience to him. Before that, though, there was one day where he was tending the sheep in the field with his brothers, and he returns home and he gives his father what the text says is a bad report of them. We don't know for sure what that was. Maybe he was tattling on something that they did, or maybe he made up a story. The Jewish Midrash, though, does fill in that gap for us. Quite creatively, I will say. It says, Joseph told his father that his brothers ate limbs torn from living animals. Whether it's a truth or a lie, that is pretty grim. But notice the echo there, too. The brothers, in trying to cover their tracks, will later dip Joseph's robe in goat blood and then give it to his father and say, a wild animal has devoured him. Joseph has surely been torn to pieces. Their lie is built from the same violent image that Joseph used against them. It's history on repeat. Now, family systems psychologists understand this dysfunction well, that patterns will repeat down the generations until someone decides not to let them anymore. And some research even suggests that there's a biological piece as well, that trauma may leave chemical markers that get passed down to children. That is, until someone makes that conscious decision to acknowledge the truth and to break the cycle. Amy Jill Levine puts the simplest version of what can stop it. She says, I wonder if anyone ever said to Joseph, don't be such a twit. And I wonder if Jacob ever told his other sons, I love you. Somebody saying the honest thing out loud is what can finally start to break the pattern. So, what is the good news in a chapter that ends with a boy in a pit, sold into slavery, and a father about to be lied to? There isn't any. Not yet, in the story, at least. The caravan disappears into Egypt, and the brothers sit down to eat like absolutely nothing has happened. But we have the privilege of knowing how the story turns out, even if they don't. Years later, an older Joseph, after helping his brothers during a famine and feeding them, will say six words to those brothers that wronged him. Do not quarrel along the way. Not, you owe me. Not even, I forgive you. Just, let's stop hurting each other. That cycle is not broken by erasing the past, but by honest naming real grief for what was lost and choosing a new pattern over an older one, which is exactly what Joseph will eventually do. Because it is repair, not perfection, that is one of the most underrated tools that we have. But that kind of repair is never a solitary effort. It's a joint one. It is the thing that we do alongside of God, who is already at work in us, taking what was meant for harm and turning it slowly into something that can be handed down as a blessing instead of a hurt. Now, Dietrich Bonhoeffer, writing from a German prison in Christmas in 1942, put all of this about as hopefully as I think anyone ever has. He wrote, I believe that God can and will let good come out of everything, even the greatest evil. And Joseph will say the sentence later in this story that the whole tale has been working toward. Even though you intended to do harm to me, God intended it for good in order to preserve a numerous people. What you did was not fine, but it doesn't get the last word. And that is the promise that is underneath every wound that we receive and every wound that we inflict. What we intend for harm or what was done to us, God is stubbornly at work turning toward good. It's not instant. It's not without cost. But it is toward the good.